on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, where with each visit, we remind you that no matter where your hometown is in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you, right down the street, maybe right even next door to you, men and women who have put their lives on the line for the sake of our freedom. If you've ever been a sheep herder, a wool grower, there's a good chance you've had some interactions with our guest today, 92-year-old Julian Mazuka of Lemoore. For me, the closest I've come is eating at John Madden's favorite restaurant, Wool Growers, in my hometown of Las Banas. But when you talk about growing wool with Mr. Mazuka, he knows about that. He spent most of his life in the sheep shearing business. For 2 years in the World War II era, he was cutting the hair of his fellow paratroopers instead. I want to take a brief moment to talk about Honor Flight right now. If you're listening in Kern County or the Central Coast, Honor Flight has been operating in your area for a couple years now. But Central Valley Honor Flight's inaugural trip with 75 World War II veterans will head to the World War II Memorial next month. Our guest today, Mr. Mazuka, is going to be on that charter flight, and he was with us this past week at the Golden Eagle Arena in Lemoore for a really special event. Had such a great time out there. Such a privilege to meet so many of you. Want to thank EECU, West Hills College, and Congressman David Valadeo for making it all possible. Farney Automotive Group was there to present a check for $10,000 to Central Valley Honor Flight. And we all watched the award-winning documentary, Honor Flight, One Last Mission. This is not an exaggeration. There was not a dry eye in the arena. You really need to see this movie. And the next chance is going to be October 7th at the Clovis Veterans Memorial District Theater. Congressman Devin Nunes will be among our special guests this time. I'll tell you more about it next week, but it was really special to be there in Lemoore with Mr. Mazuka and his beautiful family. So we're going to move on with some more of his story now. I'm curious, back in the States in June of 1944, did you guys hear about the fate of 13,000 paratroopers who dropped behind enemy lines in those early morning hours of D-Day? 42 of the C-47s carrying them were destroyed. Over 1,000 paratroopers confirmed killed in that operation. Many more wounded, even more than that, missing. So did you guys hear about all that?
They made a big mistake. They jumped in at night time. They lost quite a few. Some of the guy lost, and then from then on, we used to jump in the daytime, beginning daylight, because they made a big mistake. They lost quite a few.
And when you guys heard about that, did that have an impact on you? Did you feel like that's what we might be in store for? And when you guys heard about that, did that have an impact on you? Did you feel like that's what we might be in store for?
No, it had no impact at all.
So you grew up in Texas. You joined the service out of Arizona. Came to California for training, all the way across to Georgia. You saw a lot of the country, but had you ever been on a ship before they shipped you out?
No, I've never been.
So what was that like? What do you remember about heading overseas?
Well, it was very nice. We went back the boat called La Quitinia, the largest, biggest in England, got 13,000 troops. And we land in Laca Beach, Scotland. And then from there, we were on a train all the way to London. Cross the channel again.
Did you get seasick at all on that journey?
I never got seasick.
How was the food?
Very good. We eat twice a day, but we were all right.
You had a birthday cruise, huh? You had your birthday on the ship?
Yeah. It was in January 28th.
What did they do for you? Did anybody know it was your birthday?
Nobody knew. Just myself.
Do you remember what you were thinking going overseas? Because here your family didn't want you to go. They wanted you to go to Mexico and avoid all this, and here you are. Heading overseas. What do you think you were thinking at the time?
I was young. I was thinking something about it. Just, if something happened, it's going to happen. If it don't, that's it. That's the way that feels.
Did you get letters from home?
Oh, yeah. My folks are used to write it to them.
And you moved pretty quickly from Scotland into England, then across to France. And what did you find when you got there, where all that intense fighting had been months earlier?
Well, everything was destroyed when we went in France. Especially when they crossed the channel, that town was completely demolished.
What was it like to see that? Because I imagine you'd never been anywhere where that was what was in front of you.
Kind of surprised me to see something like that. I mean, I didn't figure something like that. But
were you anticipating the first time that you would actually jump when it mattered, when this was an actual mission against the enemy? What do you remember about the build-up to that?
I know there was, we were going to jump. and we had to do the best I know. You know, but a week before jump, we studied everything. They briefed everything. What canals and power lines and all of that, everything. And we know what we're supposed to do. As soon as we hit the ground, we know exactly what we're supposed to do. And like we jumped 10 minutes behind the second battalion. By the time we hit the ground, we're bullets going in all directions. Airplanes burning, houses burning, and that's a big mess.
Well, and I want to talk to you a lot more about that, but for people that aren't familiar with us, let's tell them what this is all about, because they maybe know that paratroopers jumped on D-Day. Maybe they know about Operation Market Garden in Holland, but this is Operation Varsity. What was Operation Varsity? Where were you guys going, and what were you trying to do?
When we jumped, we tried to go to Berlin. That's where you're supposed to go. And this is where we were. I mean, we soon hit the ground. We two divisions jumping in the same place, England and Americans. The England went towards the Rhine, America, we went towards Berlin. And we put mountains on days on the front line before the Second Army take over.
Yeah, so you had over a month of frontline combat after parachuting in, but you guys took off from France. This was an absolutely massive effort. While the ground troops are hoping to cross the Rhine, you get dropped on the other side of the Rhine, behind enemy lines, and you landed near Wesel, Germany, determined to fight your way to Berlin. I know how to spell it, W-E-S-E-L, but where exactly is Wesel?
It's 25 miles the other side of the Rhine. And from then on, we go all the way to Berlin, and that highway, I mean, they call it Autobahn. Yeah. That's a big freeway going to Berlin. Some of the guys were on the left, some on the right, and we go straight up. Every day we march. We take a little town every day, one or two towns, and sometimes we burn places because we get a fire, and we happen to go that way, they burn the whole town. Quite a few towns we destroy.
I know that most of your experience was on the ground, but I want to get this picture. I'm sure a lot of people are fascinated by how this all started. And I imagine it struck you, the magnitude of this, when you guys were taken off. How many different airplanes full of paratroopers were going? I mean, there must have been a lot of birds in the sky, so to speak.
There was.
Was it kind of awe-inspiring to see so many planes going up at the same time?
Surprised me to see something like that. And surprised me when the Second Army take over. Well, all day, they don't have to fight. They give us a rest. They take over, and the following day, Germany surrendered. So I don't think they had to fight a bullet. They're going straight on.
You guys did all the work for them, I guess. But I did look up the statistics on Operation Varsity, and I want the folks at home to picture just how immense this was with all the C-47s and C-46s, one of which is at Castle Air Museum in Atwater now, by the way, the C-54s, the gliders, the fighter escorts. This airborne armada stretched 200 miles in the sky. And how about this? For the entire force to cross any given point on the ground took more than 2.5 hours. That's how many Allied troops were in the sky on March 24th, 1945. Tell me also, what was it like jumping out of that C-47 on this mission? So you guys get to where you're supposed to drop, and then it's time to actually do this, what you've practiced so many times and trained for. Do you remember that moment when you exited the airplane and how that all unfolded?
Oh, yeah. I remember very well, but that's what we're supposed to do. So we do it.
Were you nervous at all jumping out? Were you confident you'd get it right, that your chute would open, that you'd land in the right place? I mean, what were you thinking?
Well, I was thinking, I hope nobody hit me. I was hoping no bullet hit me. And luckily, it doesn't happen. So they hit the ground, and we're ready to go. And we started to go where you're supposed to go.
And what all were you armed with?
M1.
You had an M1 rifle. Did you have any grenades? What else were you carrying?
We got some grenades and M1 ammunition. And we had a fruit for 3 or 4 days. K-rations, they call it K-rations. And that's all the blanket and the things in the back.
How soon did you encounter the enemy? How long did it take before you saw the enemy and they were shooting at you?
The sooner we hit the ground, we can see bullets coming in all directions, and the house is burning, and we're ready to go. You see somebody, it's the enemy, and we let it go. We let it have it. Ever since they moved, we shoot him.
Were you scared?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. I never get scared. I mean, I just hope it's not in, nobody hit me, and that's it. Yeah, I was very lucky that nothing happened, not even one scratch.
You said you weren't scared. And I guess maybe if you're going to be successful as a paratrooper, maybe you need to put that out of your mind. But where do you think that came from? What convinced you that you were going to be okay and you were going to make it through all this?
That's pretty hard to say. I don't know. I was young. I don't think nothing bad going to happen to me, but I was willing to take whatever they come.
Some guys tell me that they just didn't think anything could happen to them. You know, they knew they were tough. Or some guys say, you know, they had faith in God that carried them through, or they just didn't think about death. Any of those sound like what you were feeling?
I don't think about that. When your time comes, that's it. I'm the hard believer. When the time comes, that's it, no matter what.
How did it affect you the first time you saw one of your fellow paratroopers get killed in combat?
Well, I see quite a few. Yeah, especially my company commander. He's right close to me. Not very far from somebody shoot him right in the head. Down he went. 3 days after we jumped, we got some tanks come and help us. And we were supposed to be behind those tanks. And he got a little bit to the right. And they got hit. We lost quite a few.
Did that trouble you? Did that make you wonder if you were going to be next? Was it just painful?
They don't answer. That's when the time come and that's it. Maybe that was helping me. I was afraid of nothing.
So would you say you kind of got numb to it?
Well, yeah, and I was a little bit crazy. You know, when they crossed the canal after 3 days, there was quite a few. There was a machine gun to the left, a machine gun to the right. And I got on top of the levee and looked around. And the sergeant said, "Julian, get out of there. You're gonna get hit." I said, "They don't like Mexicans."
And it worked, I guess. You must have been right.
By golly, Tony Garcia, he the one that threw those two machines, one on the left and one on the right. He sneaked in, and boy, he hit it. He got a silver medal for that.
Silver star for taking out those machine guns. Is that one of those things, sticking your head up like that? Is that one of those things you look back on now and say, what was I thinking?
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. I said, when the time comes, the time's coming. That's it. Don't worry. Don't worry about things.
Well, I'm glad your time didn't come right there, because you got a couple daughters and 5 grandkids and 5 great-grandkids who wouldn't be here if it did. When you think back about all that, is there one moment that you think was your closest call, the closest you came to when your time comes, your time comes?
I think so. I still believe in those things.
What was the closest call you had? What was the closest you came to being hit?
Well, when we crossed the canal, I was trying to get in a tree, and I guess they see me, and they was shooting. I could see the bullets hit the tree, and it was pretty close.
But nothing ever hit you? You never wounded at all?
Not even when they jump, and we got no scratch or nothing. Some of the guys got scratches and all of that, and broken legs and some of that, but I didn't have no problems at all.
So this is the spring of 1945, and the war in Europe ended in May of 1945. Did you guys have a sense that you were getting close to finishing this up, that you were about to defeat Germany?
But a couple of weeks after we jumped, they tried to give up. Sometimes we got as much as 500, 600, they wouldn't surrender. They come and say, that's it, they don't want no more fight.
So you guys would take them prisoner and get them somewhere?
The sergeant said, 3 volunteers, you and you go get them, so... We're going to bring it in. One America in the front, and one in the left, and one in the right, and one behind.
You just march them around like that. There was a situation where you personally captured 3 Germans?
Yeah, well, I wasn't even in the front line. Some of the guys were about a mile ahead of us in the front line. And we go by to the haystack. And when I went by to the haystack, I smelled something like a human beings. And I said, I smelled something here. And the guy said, yeah, somebody shot. You guys, I know, it smells something else. So when I kick the hay, he has 3 Germans inside of that haystack.
Wow.
So when I hit the hay, and they started moving the legs, and the hay come.
So were you checking every haystack you saw after that, or what?
Not very many haystacks, and I happened to go in that one. And this was.
Well, and let me ask you about that. I don't know how many of you guys there were, but was that a situation where they were just hiding and hoping nobody found them? Or was that a situation where they had weapons and could have killed you if you didn't see them?
They had no weapons. they strive to survive because we check everything and there's no weapons inside of us. I guess they throw the weapons or hide them someplace. So I don't know, but they're trying to.
Well, you know, another interesting question, I guess, to ask, and I've had different takes on this one, too, is how did you feel about the Germans, the guys that you were fighting, the guys that almost killed you a couple times? How did you feel about the enemy?
Yes, like us, you know, when we in the front line, if something happened, we use the same guys to pull the ones that got wounded. The same Germans, they helped to help, and we did the same to them. They got hit, they're in bad shape, we get them out and help them out.
You saw some of your medics help out wounded Germans?
Yeah, we do quite a few then. We get them out and they're in bad shape, they want to survive.
When did you find out that Germany surrendered, and what was that moment like?
I feel there was something big. We don't have to fight no more.
Did you guys celebrate a little bit?
The second army take over, we got quite a bit of relief. We don't have to be in the front line. The second army take over. And the following day, they surrendered, so they don't have to do very much.
Yeah. So you guys had already gone back for R&R or what?
Well, after we do that, they changed to another camp. There was a little town they call Oberhaus in Stuttgart. And they had a German camps, and a Russian camp. They all those prisoners, they got ahead of them in those camps. Mm-hmm. And they used to get up in the nighttime and do quite a bit of damage. So we put quite a few from 6 to 6. They're supposed to be out after 6 o'clock. They had to be in the camp. And they were always doing, watching those things.
Did you hear at any point during this time about the concentration camps and about what the Germans had done to their political prisoners and the Jewish people?
I was in the camp. I see some they are in bad shape. Some already died, and some was ready to be dying in pretty bad shape. I mean, not even one, quite a few.
When you saw that and realized what those people had been through, how did that affect you?
Well, it's pretty hard to see those poor guys dying in pretty bad shape. They didn't have nothing. We try to help as much as we can, but I know they need help real bad.
A lot of people don't realize there were all kinds of camps in German-occupied territory. And after a little research, I believe the camp Mr. Mazuka is talking about was a coal mining camp in Sterkrade, just north of Oberhausen, where Russian and Allied prisoners were forced to work in those coal mines until the Germans were overrun. This isn't one of the concentration camps as we know them now, but still a place where the conditions were deplorable and the treatment of the prisoners beyond inhumane. Mr. Mazuka saw quite a bit in World War II, and his story isn't over just yet. We'll have the rest of Hometown Heroes right after this. The average age of the veterans on this program is pretty close to 90, so I've seen firsthand over the years the challenges of aging, and I've realized that everybody approaches them a little differently. For some, a friendly senior living community is the ideal option, but for many of us, there's no place like home. I don't have any ruby slippers for you, but I do have an idea. Call Jason Selsler at 317 Construction, recognized by the National Association of Home Builders as a certified age-in-place specialist. Instead of giving up the comforts of home, why not let 317 Construction make your home more comfortable by making it more accessible? Jason and his crew can widen doorways, install ramps for wheelchairs or scooters, reconfigure your counters for better access, modify your shower for safety, secure grab bars wherever you need them, whatever it takes to allow you and your family to keep making your memories in the place that holds so many of them, your home sweet home. Call 905-8490. That's 559-905-8490. If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there, free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County or the Central Coast, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. Or go to honorflightkerncounty.org. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor Flight, CV as in Central Valley, CVHonorFlight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. Maybe you're the son or daughter of a veteran and you'd like to go along as a guardian. There are applications for that too, and there are other ways you can help. Donations to Honor Flight are tax deductible. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.